This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. I was thinking to see that No More Bullshit song. It just gets stuck in my head. Sometimes I find myself walking around going, "No more bullshit." For no good reason.
No more freaking bullshit.
Right, exactly. There we go.
No more bullshit.
Right. And you know, if you sang that in the office sometimes, I think you'd get a lot less crap from people. If you just walked around, but with a smile on your face, you mustn't look like a misery, and you go, "No more bullshit," you know, and then people go, "Oh, okay, well."
Well, what if you sang it halfway through a meeting?
Yeah, you could.
You know, meetings essentially are just mostly bullshit.
Mm. Let's play it for everybody now. If you listen to the podcast instead of listening to us live every morning, you might even miss this, but here, just for everybody who, you can play this. You can even have someone edit it out of the podcast for you, so you can have it. I would prefer us to get credit, but what the hell? Here it is, and you just play this in the middle of the meeting. Everybody,
no more bullshit. No more bullshit.
No more. Your boss is standing up in the meeting.
You just lost it a little higher.
No more bullshit. And then you just leave the meeting.
Yeah.
It's great. I had a funny thought yesterday. I suddenly imagined, because I've been reading a bit of Stephen Hawking, which I've told you is the toughest thing for me to do. I don't know if I'm dumber than the average reader when it comes to those books, which I may be, or whether he is hard to follow, which I don't think, because he's popularized science, that man. And, you know, I can't imagine that I'm the only one who's struggling here, but maybe I am.
Okay.
Anyway, reading him. And he's talking about, you know, sooner or later, something shitty's going to happen to humanity. We need to be able to find a way off of this planet. And he talks about overpopulation, and he talks about asteroids, and he talks about the sustainability of resources and greenhouse emissions and all of this stuff. Like, he was interested in the big picture. And I mean the really big picture, if you consider that he was writing about the universe so much of the time. But I was thinking, if something did happen to us, mm-hmm. like there was some kind of cataclysmic event and humanity was pushed back 5,000 years. So that would put us about the time of Moses. And we all had to start hunting again and gathering things where we could and living in whatever wasn't taken out by either the nuclear fallout or the asteroids impact or whatever it might have been. How many of us would survive in the wild? Let's imagine it wasn't devastation of like a nuclear winter. Let's just imagine it's the same world that we're inhabiting now, except civilization is finished. In other words, there's no electricity, there are no devices, there's no running water, that kind of thing. So we're basically living like our ancestors used to live, right? Simplest possible way to live. How would you survive? Would you survive? Because I know there are lots of people who think they would survive who probably wouldn't, and who would become prey for sharper, faster, more dangerous people.
I think
it would be really interesting, right?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like that guy, but I think it'd be really awesome at the same time.
I know, because definitely it
would weed out so much of life's crap that
the things that we think are important.
Yeah, like so much like politicians, general charlatans, they would get so quickly weeded out in this world. They would have things thrown at them.
They'd be killed.
They would be killed. Literally, they'd be killed. Like Lord of the Flies, it would go down, and it'd go down quick.
I did fantasize. It wasn't just imagining. It was fantasizing. I actually got into it, and it took me to a dark place where I was suddenly imagining carrying a spear or an edged weapon of a kind, and kind of establishing yourself.
Well, that's
within a territory as a primate. You're like, "This is my territory. I'm going to kill anything that I need to eat, and I'm going to kill anyone who threatens my territory."
So you'd have the inclination to rule your little
whatever. It world. Could be an acre, it could be 10, it could be 100 acres. I don't know. I don't know what's possible.
Because I as soon as you started describing the scenery, instantly I thought, nope, it's fine. I'll be a follower. I'll just
Would you go into follower mode?
I really would.
Because you're not a follower by default in modern civilization, right?
But in that setting, don't think I'd be able to.
Well, you
beating
also,
on your chest.
You know what would happen?
Your hand.
You would have to cooperate with other humans in a much more intimate way.
Yeah.
Like you would have to form little tribes again.
Yeah, I mean, if you think the church is bad, wait until we go primal. Then you've really got to kind of like follow suit.
And you toe the line. You don't.
But in the same
break
way,
rank.
Again, like natural order will take place and things probably could be a bit better.
Well, in some ways it would be better, in some ways it would be worse. I mean, I've always said that this is a great time to be alive and we've got this incredible, you know, ability to understand the world and to make sense of things like we've never had before. And I do love that. I love technology. I'm not an enemy of technology. But if there was one big electromagnetic pulse that, let's say it came from the sun, you know, some enormous solar event that caused all of our electric grids to be disrupted and everything that was electric was fried to a point where it couldn't just be fixed. And it would need time to reset itself. And we probably would have to go back to some level of dealing with life without electricity. Well, we'd sleep better. I mean, we'd sleep because there would be nothing else to do at night. And you'd wake up if there was danger, but you would sleep. Mm. You'd probably eat better because you'd be eating raw food and you'd be eating a lot of raw
but
protein.
But how you get into getting that food in the first place, then how you prepare it? It
no,
would
no,
all
it's
be,
complicated. Yeah. I mean, this is not easy. I would immediately go into like mate and have children mode. I would absolutely, because the life I'm living at the moment doesn't require that of me. Mm-hmm. But in a wild situation, you'd need to, because that gives you a reason to stay alive and to bring food home and all of that stuff. And you do it because it's about the perpetuation of the species. Then you do feel threatened as a species and as an individual. So I would change to that immediately. I think I would, you know, all the fine, delicate things that we're interested in as human beings, and everybody's super specialized. We discussed this the other day. You know, some people are in, I mean, like a field like PR would become completely obsolete. A field like architecture would disappear.
Kind of every field except for butchery or hunting.
Yeah, I think there would be very limited
and basic clothes lines. I mean, what's an auto mechanic going to do?
Yeah, well, that falls away as well. But they could repair and fix things. You know, we'd still have the wheel, for example. So there would be an auto mechanic. There'd be a job for someone like that. But it wouldn't be a job. And like, you wouldn't get paid a salary, basically. The money system would fall to pieces.
Yeah, it would give you a social standing.
Your David Lally would have to tone down on the sparkles and pearls and just do pure animal art.
Yeah.
Like
a part of me would love to see it, but I don't know if I'd love to stay there.
Yeah, it'd be cool for a few days.
Yeah, I think
And then before you know it, you just killed someone you didn't mean to, and you'd be like, wow, I'm actually such a savage.
And you'd be crying.
Is this the
primal
part of you that enjoys, for example, going out to the gun range? Is it the shooting range or the gun range?
Yeah, shooting range.
Yes.
Like, well, no, that's a different part of me, because that's like trying to improve a skill.
Okay.
That's it.
Have you ever been hunting?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I liked it a lot.
See, so there's that part of you.
But not, you know, I mean, we did it. There are two different kinds of hunting that I did. There's the proper one where you track the game and you have to find the animal. And then you have to keep absolutely quiet and there's a certain distance. You try to get as close as you can. And then, you know, on foot, obviously.
Mm.
And that's hard. And it can take a few days, and it can be you and the elements, and it's tough. And I haven't done that for years, but I did love it when I did it. And then there's kind of the cull that you do from the back of the bucky, because you have too many impala on a certain piece of property, and the owner wants you to just help him cull.
Mm.
And you get tons of biltong. And that's a different kind of hunting. I mean, I get that hunting. And sometimes I don't want to give people the wrong impression because people are so touchy about hunting. You don't just shoot at random from the back of a bucky. Let me tell you, those antelopes see a bucky and they go. They're not hanging around to see what happens. So you still have, there's a certain amount of skill, and even in that, you know, you have to do a little bit of the careful approach and all of that stuff. Mm. But yeah, I do love it. And I think maybe we just have to occasionally get it out of our system. Maybe that's what the key is here. Maybe the key is that you do have to go outside. And I haven't done this for a long time, is just to be in a place that isn't a holiday destination with a 5-star hotel. And I'm not talking about camping either. It could be someone's house in the mountains. It could be somebody who lives in a sort of very wooded or a jungle area. You just go and live there with them for a while. You chop wood. You know, you make a fire every night because that's what you've got. You don't have electricity. I think that would be interesting.
Of course it is, because it makes you think about different stuff. You know, if you do the same thing every single day, you eat the same thing, you see the same people, you will stagnate like Balhazia-driven water. Like, you'll just be a dreadful mess of a human being. And that's why you feel refreshed when you go away. That is the purpose of going back to the wild nature, all that kind of stuff. You ask anybody who goes camping, and they're generally quite together people. They might be friends of yours. They might be different to you, but they're quite balanced in how they go about their lives.
And I do think there's an element of like that balance that you say, that I'm a little envious of. You know, we come into work, we do our work. I mean, there's no job for us in the future, like doing this. This is not a job.
I know, we'll adapt it. We'll just stand on big rocks
and shout at people.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'd be like that annoying Survivor castmate who like forms alliances and they try to get the immunity idol and they're
conniving smart,
and backstabbing.
That would be smart.
That's what I would do. Just be in the background.
Someone says, did you see the 18-year-old boy who strangled 2 16-year-old girls to death? He was a hunter, and everyone's now saying that that's the reason that he is also now a murderer. That's from Liesl in Pretoria. Well, that's a crazy leap of... To say because the guy's a hunter, he strangles human beings to death is insane. Insane. That's like saying someone who's a bank manager is more likely to kill because you hear in the news that a bank manager killed people.
Well, I think there's definitely an element there that he likes to see death in his own hands.
No, that's not what hunting is. Nobody I know who hunts does it because they want to see death.
Well, that's the end goal of hunting.
No, it's what happens, but it's not the goal. The hunt itself
is to create death.
Death is the result.
Yes.
Yeah, but you don't go into it for that result. You go into it because you're enjoying the hunt. It's the process. I don't want to go down this road.
But it's still the result.
Listen, I've got a sister who's an animal rights activist. I can't have these conversations at home. I do agree with you to some degree. It's not the purpose. It's the result. There is a difference.
Not to.
But the result is a purpose. You get into something. It's okay. Kind of the same thing.
No, I don't think
I don't
so.
You've ever been hunting?
No, that's something not, I care about. I don't want to see someone die.
But unless
I have to eat.
To what you were saying a little earlier, it's the standing and waiting in the corner. It's plotting and the counting and the strategy to it. Is that the thrill?
I don't even want
to... That's called the foreplay. I mean...
Look, the only people you can... I'm sorry to say this, but the only people you talk about hunting with are people who've hunted. Hmm. You can't have this because it gets political. It becomes I'm not for it. Therefore, blah blah blah. Please, let's not. I don't want
to. You can't just only speak to people who do something to speak about a topic. That's like me saying, "Well, Ben, you never played the French Open. How can you comment on this?"
No, but I can't do this with you this morning. I can't. I just can't. I don't want to talk about hunting now. I really don't. Let's look at these comments. I don't. It's just.
But I hear. I hear your point.
It's going to get ugly. You know. You're going to be saying to me.
I'm not getting ugly. It's just that ultimately we're talking about things that are result driven, right?
Yeah.
Result is death. A hunter doesn't go, "Oh wow, I came so close to shooting that buck today. That was really good." No, the hunter goes, "No, I killed this buck today," and then that's why they got those mantelpiece things with massive heads in there. That's what hunters do. They want to kill something. They don't come here and trophy hunter. You don't get a well played hunter. The result is to kill something. That's a trophy. A trophy wife isn't someone who's like just goes and hangs out and they go, well, back in 76, I had a drink with that person. It's all result driven.
All right. That's absolute bullshit. I don't like hunting myself, but I have family and friends who do, and none of them are murderers. Brendan. Yeah. Someone says
there's levels to this. I mean, I'm not saying it's the result why that person strangled this woman, but he clearly does like that.
Somebody says, morning, we are living in the Stone Age. There are poor people who are currently living without running water and electricity, living in squatter camps, etc. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
But there is an abundance of technology that was not available to them. So, I mean, that's like saying, for example, I could go out into the woods if I wanted to. I don't live in the woods, but I could.
You have the choice.
Someone in a squatter camp can still go into a shopping mall. Their only barrier is economic. Their only barrier is financial.
I'm surprised by the comment you two have made in saying that you enjoy or would enjoy being out basically nowhere with no...
Isn't it kind of exciting? It's like how much... when you have to rely on yourself like that, it's a real test.
What's exciting? Like pushing yourself to the limits and...
No, I think it's just having a very definite purpose every single day. Live. Like, no one...
Y'all can live on a comfy couch and internet connection too.
I feel like I'm alive then. But that's the beauty of where we are. We have choice, like Gary said, by being a great time to live. But when your purpose is so defined like that, I think there's something hugely rewarding about it.
It really pulls everything into sharp contrast. Like, you immediately know.
It engages your senses like nothing else. Like, everything nowadays dulls our senses because we're just given everything. Like plopped out like that.
I mean,
oh, that's quite an emphatic point.
I do think a lot of people are, they just exist. A lot of people really live. A lot of people exist. They're just there. They were brought into the world. Maybe they wanted to be there. Maybe they didn't. You don't know because you don't know whether you were conscious before you were born. But then you end this life and maybe you don't have a purpose. A lot of people wake up every day without a purpose.
It's become earth furniture, really.
Earth furniture. Wow. That's a good term. But would you survive if you were suddenly plunged, if the whole world, not just parts of the world, if the whole world were suddenly unelectrified, there was no facility, no modern medicine, no clothes factory, no car manufacturer, nothing, none of that stuff worked ever again, and we were plunged into like a dark age, would you survive? That's really what got me thinking.
But I think this is half the appeal about what people watch those zombie shows.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's not because of the great acting or the storyline. They got nothing. They got to survive. How are they going to do it?
Look, when push comes to shove, you want to survive, and I think I'd be able to survive, but I think I'd lose my motivation to really live my life at like 100%. It's now like, ugh, okay, it's just another day. Here we are. I'd have to probably go back to eating meat.
Someone says here, I can't wait for the weekend of the 22nd. My friend sponsored me 2 kudu. It's all about the biltong, baby. Mm. Well, I'll tell you what, there's nothing like game meat. Game biltong is the... I know you're a vegetarian.
Okay, sorry. I had to fix my face there.
It's the best. Killing, robbing, and stealing is our everyday part of our lives to survive, says somebody. Yeah, but I think, you know... There are elements of society that are trying to be better than that. And I think that that's noble and that's where we should aspire to be. But our primitive origins betray the fact that we are actually just killing, robbing, stealing primates. And I think we've got to try to be better than that. But if you were plunged into history, how would you do? Would you survive? That's all. Think about that today. And look around you and look at everybody you have to work with or to be around today and think about who you think would survive and who you think wouldn't. I think it'd be pretty fascinating.
Mm.
Huh? Don't you reckon? Just in a meeting or whatever today, you see someone sitting on the other side of the table who's annoying you a little bit. Just imagine like out in the wild hunting them. Just imagine.
Those are healthy thoughts.
Don't you think it would be interesting? Yeah. I mean like in a proper... Winner takes all survival situation. Who would win? You or them? Now that would be interesting. Mm. Anyway, lots of other stuff to talk about today. We've got the burning platform with Justice Malala. He's coming in at 7 o'clock this morning. We didn't ever get to this, but Marley van Breda's ex-boyfriend said some things a while ago.
And didn't he say some things prior to the trial as well?
I think he did, but this is really worth taking a listen to. So this is I got this off of YouTube, and Marley's ex, so he's not with her anymore, but he had some things to say about the family and everything.
My name is Stef van der Westhuizen. I was the ex-boyfriend of Marley van Breda. I dated her for 2 years.
What is your response to the verdict?
Currently, I'm very emotional, but I think certain verdicts, people's opinions matter. So, like, my opinion might be different from others' opinion, and I think I'm happy with the outcome, but yeah, we'll see how in 2 weeks for the postponement how it will be. Yes, he was a good friend of mine for a year, more than a year, and he was actually my best friend. And so it was very emotional for me to see him in that state, and I felt very sorry for him.
But you're happy with the outcome?
Personally, I'm happy with the outcome, yes.
Well, there he is. That's Madly's ex, who says he was best friends with Henry.
But I'm pretty sure that was the same guy who said that he was going to save her from that horrible family because he knew of the infighting. And he knew of all the tension.
I don't recall that as well as you do.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing that.
Well, clearly, he's the chief operator on this from Badar case.
Yeah, you are. Well, you're our chief prosecutor.
Clearly,
yeah.
I was the most interested in this. No, I'm almost certain, guys. I'll do the research. But there was a whole thing about, because there was speculation of tension in the families, and he basically stoked the flames of that by saying, yeah, I will save you. He wrote this long letter to her and all that kind of shit. Look, obviously, young love, whatever. But it was there. I mean, listen to him speak. He's happy with the verdict, but they were friends.
Yeah.
He's battling to find the right words, but the sentiment's coming out.
Well, I keep thinking also, if you had a best friend, he said they were best friends, and your best friend was accused of axe murdering their family.
Bye. You didn't know me.
But you didn't know that they were capable of that.
Well, firstly, I'd be lucky to be alive that he didn't kill me. Secondly, I delete your number, your email address. Yeah. Whoops, I don't know where you live anymore.
See, it's like, well,
don't call me. I don't know you.
The friendship ended and it didn't even need a conversation or a message to end. It just, that was it. Done.
You're not hanging around.
If you ever were to murder anyone by mistake, don't call me at midnight.
No.
Like, Sia, help me, please bring a rope and a carpet. We'll roll them up and hide. No. No, thanks.
But, you know, I've always thought that there must be so much pressure in being hounded by people when it's part of a big news story. Because obviously the journalists, you know, they found this guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was hanging outside of the court or whatever, but, like, I wouldn't want any involvement in the people
right.
at all. Especially
Absolutely.
If it's a big news story that everyone is talking about. I'd be like, leave me alone. I don't want any part of this.
Well, yesterday I got a call from an editor of a newspaper. He's like, we want you to write a thing about Palestine and Israel. I'm like, no. Asked him, you can take your pretty little question and shove it up your ass. I'm not interested.
I've said what I had to say.
By the way, Ivor Fechter, who we've had on the show once or twice, he wrote a very interesting article about that whole situation and my comments on it, which caused all this furore, 2.5 weeks ago? And obviously most of it's sort of petered out now. It's not as big a deal, but it's a good article. And if you happen to be around today and you have a couple of minutes, you might want to read it. It's on the Daily Maverick. All right, so let's get on with it. We've got things to do, people to see, places to go. Let's turn our attention to the five things you need to know today. Here's Mabali Moloi.
So, a horrific story emerging from earlier this week. A father is facing murder charges after allegedly shooting dead his son. And this happened outside a school in Johannesburg.
Oh my God.
The shooting happened on Tuesday night.
Outside a school?
The father claims that he shot the 16-year-old by mistake. SAPS says that the father was arrested and he is going to be appearing in court today, this morning.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
This is a horrific story.
So, do we know what happened?
So, very long story short, the father had taken his son, Luyanda, who is 16 years old, to a school for night classes. And the son was meant to be done at around 8, and the father drove back to school to pick him up. But the son wasn't out in time, and so the father eventually fell asleep in the car. Oh, the son, once was done, approached the car, and because recognizing the car, started to open the door. And in the slumber waking up panicky state, the father instantly reacted by just pulling out his gun and shooting at the son. It's just numbing and freaky and scary on many levels, because now the wife is speaking out saying things like the son had actually tried to call the father beforehand, so they found missed calls.
Yeah, it's been a tough week at school for these kids because, you know, as you said, it happened at their school. Mm. And some of the kids have already been speaking out, talking about the kind of guy that he was. So tragic on every single level, for the family, for the school. I mean...
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
That is horrible.
It's unbearable.
Sure.
And now he's
that
being
poor
charged.
That poor father.
Mm.
Imagine what he's going through at the moment. They've got to watch him carefully because he's gonna want to off himself. I'm telling you, that kind of thing doesn't just go away. Whew.
And he says in the police reports that he heard his son after he shot the gun saying, "It's me, Temba. Don't shoot."
Oh my God!
So to hear your son say that, and those are his last words, and the son died on his way to hospital. This man will never be the same.
No, broken.
So whether he goes to jail for however long, I think him having to live with himself every single day is insane punishment. But yeah,
that's awful.
Yeah, so he's going to make his first court appearance today, and I'm sure it will be an interesting one to keep an eye out on, because then the question is, well, then how do you charge him?
Oof.
It was an accident, but it's murder. Like, what happens next? What's the next step? Meanwhile, COSATU are joining a chorus that is calling for the health minister Aaron Motsoaledi to be fired. The trade union federation says that the healthcare system has deteriorated under his watch, and everybody is taking issue with what they're calling the minister's denial that the healthcare sector is in crisis. They're now urging for the president Cyril Ramaphosa to remove Motsoaledi with immediate effect.
Wow, it's really, it's suddenly all just mounting up against him, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem like it's getting any easier for poor old Aaron Motsoaledi. But a lot of people don't like him, and a lot of people saying he's not the best minister. I always thought maybe because he was part of the Zuma administration at a certain time and he was one of the few competent ministers, like you could actually message his competence decently. Maybe we gave him too much credit. Maybe in the land of the blind, the one-eyed was king, and there are other ministers who are now better than him. And so he's been shown up to be less than brilliant. I don't know. Very interesting story.
Emirates, who are the world's biggest long-haul carrier, don't understand why we don't already have robots sorting out our airport baggage. And they are looking to Amazon to be the people to find the solution to that problem. The ones used by Amazon.com's warehouses, at least, aren't handling the airport baggage yet. Outlining what automation, artificial intelligence, and big data can do for air travel, the carrier's president, Tim Clark, laid out a vision in which robots, with no need for human intervention, would identify our bags, put them in prescribed bins, and later take them out of the aircraft. So looking to innovation and the future, Emirates.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, because you'd also get rid of theft, right? I mean, the biggest thing for most people to deal with, it's like, I don't want to fly because my bag's going to be rummaged through by some idiot at the airport who's also intent on stealing. So a lot of people don't fly because that's the thing they're thinking about. Or when they do fly, that's what they're the most nervous about. So yeah, here's another reason. Humans, you're not as good as a robot at doing this. Why should we trust humans to do it? Bye-bye, all those jobs at O.R. Tambo. All those thieves. There must be good people there too, but I'm sorry. It's over for you as well. Bring in the robots. There we are.
Mm.
All right. Other news?
Just that there's a woman who's seeking 63,100 rand a month in spousal maintenance from her estranged common-law husband. This is pending their divorce. Go, girl. You go, girl. You yes. define your worth.
Yeah, trying to get free money.
Sure. Do whatever you want.
Look, she's saying she's justifying the amount as 10,000 rands for her hair and nails every month.
Listen, it's an expensive ordeal, that one. Absolutely. I'm telling you now.
2,500 rand for groceries.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a Jeep involved that she'd like back.
Well, you see, the thing is, he got her accustomed to a particular lifestyle and now she must maintain it. What even is so difficult to understand
years,
here?
Even though they were only married for 2 years, but sure.
Yo, you've got to tie this shit up in contracts, man.
Oh my God.
You've got to have an arrangement. You walk out of this marriage after 2 years, you get zero.
This is big for South Africa. We hardly hear of cases like this.
63,000 rand in spousal maintenance. Yo.
That's quite something, huh? I saw the best episode of Billions. I made Ben watch this one part of it with me. So there's this woman who's cheated on her husband, all right? And her husband is like, he's trying very hard to get her back and he's in love with her. Anyway, the one guy in the movie, in the show, he arranges for this other man in her life, who's not his friend, to be gotten rid of. Not killed or anything, but just like he persuades him to step away.
Ooh.
And then he invites the woman around for a little one-on-one so he can talk to her about cheating on his friend. So he sits there and he says to her, here, sign this post-nuptial contract where you get, you know, 20,000 rand and you're out of here.
Mm-hmm.
$20,000. So she signs it, and then this guy's father walks in, like a real old school guy, and he says, all right, this is what you got to do. And he says to her, you have got to go back and make it work. You got to find out what this guy wants and what you want sexually and make it happen. Ooh. Learn. He says, get off the birth control pills. It's time you have a family. He says, it's like this real old school thing. He says, and make sure you don't have any venereal or sexual diseases from this other guy.
Okay.
So get yourself tested.
Okay, then.
And he walks out of the room. It's unbelievable. This scene could be like from the 1950s. It's just incredible.
Oh.
Anyway.
I would even think it happens in certain instances.
I reckon.
Now.
Oh, for sure.
And there are many people who are more than fine with going with just what some powerful spouse says.
All right, here's the price of Ethereum. $609.19, so up a little bit from yesterday, but nothing worth screaming and running around with your hands flailing in the air for. And Bitcoin at $7,693.91. Still not bad compared to where it was this time last year. Very good. But compared to where it was in December, very bad. Let's turn our attention to Ben. Ben, what are the sports headlines?
Well, Gareth, Bismarck Dubassy and Frans Steen are suddenly injured. Europe's top footballers are ranked. Big happenings in the French Open as Sharapova gets smashed. And Tyson Fury, he is going to be back in the ring. Let's start off with the rugby. It is Thursday today, so we're getting close to Saturday's big test between England and South Africa, Ellis Park. If you haven't got your tickets yet, and you are free on Saturday in the Greater Gauteng area, get on down there.
Are you going?
No, I'm playing golf. I can't promise there's going to be planes and all that other kind of paraphernalia around the stadium, but still, this is Rassie Erasmus's first proper test. Don't tell me that thing last week in Wales, against Wales in America, was anything but just 30 men tackling each other.
It's rubbish.
But Bismarck Duplessis and Francois Steen, these were the overseas box that identified to come back, add some real experience, a little bit of structure to the team. Well, they're both mysteriously not available for this week, but for the whole test series. Sorry, we released a press statement, which was very short, brief, to the point, not saying how they were injured or what's wrong with them, just that they'll miss the series. It kind of sounds a bit strange, but hey, let's not look at the negative. There's a great squad of players there, great youngsters who can have opportunity now to really shine. And I'm excited. I think it's going to be good. I really am. English have named a Kiwi guy who's suddenly become English this week, Brad Shields. He's been playing for the Hurricanes for quite some time. And Augustine Pichot, who is part of World Rugby, the ex-Argentine scrum off, says, look, this would be a bit dodgy. He says, it's not great when you see people who are born in one country play for another, but where does this happen always? England. England is still the Commonwealth. Look at that team. I mean, there's half of Samoa plays for that team as well when they're not injured. Tyson Fury, we all know he was that gypsy boxer who basically beat a Klitschko brother, then did a whole bunch of sniff and got really, really fat. And then he failed another drugs test, and he's just been a mess ever since. Then he had some mental illness, and then he was asking for time out. He got time out, and then it's just been one absolute disaster after the other. So he is now back, though. He's shed 50 kilograms.
Wow.
50 kilograms, or 8 stone, as they say in gypsy language. And he is now ready to fight again. So obviously he's trying to get back to the point where he can take on like an Anthony Joshua and be back where he thinks he belongs, at the top of world boxing. Well, tell you what, rumor is that Kate Middleton's also given him support, being the other famous gypsy in England. And hopefully they can maybe jump the broom one day. And after he is now title champion. It might happen. I'll keep you posted on that. Oh, French Open. Tell you what, it's bloody exciting. Rafael Nadal lost his first set in 3 years. Argentine Schwartzman beat him 6-4 in the first set. Nadal came back 5-3, but then the rain came down. So that match is still going to be finished today. But you know what's also sort of taking all the headlines of the French Open? Sharapova's book. I mean, this is getting more headlines than Bonang's book for all the wrong reasons. But Sharapova says it's all true.
Yeah.
Why would you write an autobiography and just have all these lies? It's all true. She says that I think Serena hated me for being the skinny kid who beat her against all odds, she said, as she also wrote that in the book. This is really funny. Not long after, I heard Serena told a friend when... Her English is terrible.
Oh.
Not long after...
This is how she wrote the book?
Okay, wait. Maybe I'm just also very bad at reading. Let's not rule that out. Not long after, I heard Serena told a friend who then told me, I'll never lose to that little bitch again. That's apparently what Serena said to her friend after losing 2004. I tell you what, she didn't. So... Let's just say Serena did say this, and sure, go for it. She stuck to her word, and that, kids, is what makes a champion. You look a skinny bitch in the eye and say you're not going to lose to her again, and you might not. But I tell you, he doesn't give a flying about Sharapova's book. That's Garbin Muguruza, because she then went on to proceedly beat her 6-2, 6-1. So Sharapova's out of the French Open, absolutely hammered. And that was probably her biggest defeat in, well, quite some time in a Grand Slam. 6-2, 6-1. That's Muguruza, she means business. She'll now take on Simona Halep, the top seed in the semi-final. And the other semi-final is Madison Keys, Sloane Stephens. Oh, French Open, this is the big time. This is the weekend. If you haven't been watching up until now, well, this is it. This is really is crunch time, because we're getting into the men's semis and the women's semis, well, they've already been decided. Right, so we all know there's so much money in football. We had the Forbes 100 list for yesterday. Well, now, an independent Swiss company, so you know they're legit, they've come up with a list of the top 25 footballers in Europe according to wealth, basically value to your team. So if you were out there looking to buy players, who would you say would be the most expensive, most valuable player? What they've done is they've taken factors like talent, contract duration, age, of course, is a huge factor, and of course, what's the status of the recruiting clubs. So if you are, I don't know, Shakhtar Donetsk and you're looking to buy someone, or you're Man United looking to buy someone, the price is actually going to be different. It's as simple as that. It's like if you're a massive movie franchise like Fast and Very Furious, and you want to say rent the Cliff Central Studios out, we'll charge you like $1 million. But if you just send some indie film, probably give it to you for like 10 grand in a six pack. So these dynamics work in sport as well. So guess who is number one, Gareth? The most valuable European footballer.
Must be Cristiano Ronaldo.
No, Cristiano Ronaldo, according to this list, is the 24th most valuable footballer in all of Europe. Yep, 24. Because another thing is, these transfer fees are being thrown out of, well, they just become crazy, aren't they? So this list kind of endeavors to give you a fair reflection of what players are actually worth. And according to this list, Cristiano Ronaldo is the 24th ranked person, valued at $121 million.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'll give you a top 10 here. Okay, let's go down. This is very interesting, because obviously people are saying, no, this is bullshit. But if you look at how it's done, actually pretty smart. Of course, Ronaldo's old, huh? He's like in his 30s. So, top 10 players. Lukaku from Man United, valued at 191 million. Then we got Paulo Dybala, who is a Juventus forward. He is valued at 192 million. Antoine Griezmann, valued at 192 million. Then we've got Kevin De Bruyne, the ginger midfielder, who now gets to play with the emojis. He's 196 million. Then Dele Alli from Spurs, 200.4 million. Then number five, Mo Salah. He is worth $200.7 million. Then number four, Lionel Messi. He's estimated to be worth $215.9 million. Into the top three, Kylian Mbappe. He is the guy who Paris Saint-Germain bought from Monaco. Very young, very talented guy. He apparently is worth $218.6 million. Number two is Neymar, who Paris Saint-Germain spent $3 bajillion on him. He's worth $229.4 million. And the most valuable European footballer, according to this list and according to all things considered, is Harry Kane from Spurs.
No.
$235.8 million.
No.
Take that to your next transfer meeting and say, right, Spurs, cough the lot. Harry Kane. Harry Kane's been good for the last two seasons. It's not been beat around the bush around that. The guy's good. $235 million? Who's going to pay that for him? That's
nobody.
My next question.
Nobody.
No one. Gareth, that's pretty much it for your big sport today. For more sports, you can catch me tomorrow at the same time, the same place, right here on Cliff Central. Otherwise, go on to thebounce.co.za for more sports stories as I put everything together in one blog post for you, which you can enjoy.
Okay, let's turn our attention to Sia now and see what he's got for us.
Remember yesterday as we were having a conversation around doctors...
A conversation?
Around doctors and the long hours that they work, etc., etc. Someone actually sent me this picture following listening to that podcast. And it's a picture of Captain Chris Blazek, who is a firefighter in the United States. And this was taken just a few days ago on June the 4th. It is a picture of Captain Chris literally sitting on the ground right next to a car and cradling a four-month-old baby and provided the context to it. So Captain Chris had been working on a house fire last Saturday and straight afterwards had just gotten back to the station and was in the shower trying to just de-stress after that. And he got a call for another emergency of a mother who was stuck on the side of the road with three of her young kids who range from 7 years old to 4 months old. And the mother was also pregnant, just by the way. And he then had to get out of the shower and go straight to the scene to assist. So after helping the mother, who was also in hysterical back and abdominal pain, they say, they managed to help her to the hospital and sorted out the situation. We still don't really know what the details are surrounding why the mother was stuck on the side of the highway. But this Captain Chris had to then stay with the kids and make sure that the kids were fine up until other family members came and took them away. But just seeing this picture this is not a job description on paper to say you will have to stay on the scene of a horrific situation like this, having to cradle this 4 month old baby. And there was something about just seeing this image and thinking about the conversation we were having yesterday that really made me want to speak about this morning, and to think of all the service men and women who devote their time to going above and beyond their
paramedics, man,
job description.
Those people have to see the most awful things, and you don't think about it, but if, let's say there's an accident, and let's say the driver, mother or father, is incapacitated. Let's say that they are injured very badly and there are kids in the back, and maybe the kids in the back are fine. Whoever gets to that scene has to calm those kids down, deal with the kids, look after the kids, just like you've said. And nobody thinks about that, really.
That's a tough job. It's massive, but these people are not even good people. They're amazing people for doing what they do. So I thought, let's just spare a moment to think about these people this morning for Sit by Sia.
That's tough, but it's very, very good.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great story. All right, thank you, Sia. Let's get cracking. We've got Justice Malala coming in a little while with The Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's and plenty of other good stuff. You want to get hold of us? WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090.
This is CliffCentral.com.